Hi, this is Mary H.K. Choi, and you're listening to Hey Cool Life, a micropod about mental health and creativity. It is July 21st, and this is episode 156. Happy Friday. Wanted to check in because it's been a while, but also because there's been some personal news. I'm definitely noticing like the ways in which I can be more gentle, because in May of this year, so just a few months ago, I was assessed for autism, and it turns out that I am autistic. I share this because I was noticing that I wasn't sharing it. I am, along with a lot of people who I've been connecting with on TikTok, P.S. like autism TikTok is fantastic, as is ADHD and the special situation that I find myself in, which is not actually that unique among people who have one or the other, which is that I have both. I believe 50 to 70% of people who are autistic have ADHD, and people with about 20 to 50% of people with ADHD also are autistic. It's a fascinating comorbidity, despite my not loving that word comorbidity, in the same way that I don't really love autism spectrum disorder as the nomenclature either. I've told some friends and they've asked, do you have Asperger's? And then it's usually followed up, because my friends tend to be people who are sensitive to language, and with like, do people still say that anymore? Or like, I know we're not supposed to say that anymore. And so it sounds like people don't know what to call autism that exhibits with aspects that are considered to be more like high functioning. Again, like problematic language. Basically, language is really trash. But and on that, you know, the reason why Asperger's hasn't been used as a term or recognized is that the DSM-5 in 2013 just sort of like clumped it with ASD, autism spectrum disorder, under that umbrella. And there's people who were assessed for Asperger's who really like that term for themselves and self-identify that way. And, you know, certainly far be it for me, as a person who has now had officially been autistic for like a month and change, to be like, you can't do that. But I say this to say that the reason why they did that, at least among certain readings and certainly my understanding of it, is that sort of creating this like almost like gradient from like, you know, quote unquote, like good to bad or something, sort of misses the point and narrows, you know, like it sort of puts people in a position to not be defined by specific needs and actually just being slotted into clinical categories. And so that's, you know, there is this sort of understanding, again, that I've only recently gleaned, which is that no two people with autism are alike. And, you know, any sort of naming convention that makes it easier to be pigeonholed and to be sort of like cornered into like, well, then you have these and then you don't have these, just actually isn't really helpful for the person. And I've certainly found that to be true. Like, the reason why I even got assessed in the first place is because after I was diagnosed with ADHD, and the reason I got that diagnosis is because I was really noticing the ways that the processes by which I was getting work done were sort of falling apart when my dad got sick, and then my mom got sick, and then my dad got sick, and then he died. And You know, there was all of this extra admin that was incredibly unpredictable and often required things like faxes and phone calls, like at all times of the day, or like someone would call me without it being planned and I would spend like 2 days trying to call them back. And that was just like eating up like so much RAM in a way that was really extraordinary. And I was like burning out. And there was part of me, you know, I'm so, so lucky to be resourced enough to have therapy and some mindfulness to be able to look at that and be like, that's really weird, or that doesn't seem commensurate with what's going on, you know. Obviously, like, I was grieving, I was sad, I was like flailing, I was like thrust back into my parents' lives despite, you know, being really happy with the status quo that we had achieved, because like I had a pretty traumatic childhood. They were not good parents for me specifically. And so, yeah, that was all really hard. But there was still this like intuitive part of me that had an inkling that was like, hey, bud, like, I know you don't always feel your feelings, but this just seems weird. And so then I got diagnosed with ADHD, and then I was medicated to get current. I am on 5 milligrams of instant release Adderall, which is a very low dose, and I take it first thing in the morning, do a bunch of things that I need to, nap, let my brain reset, and then I begin doing any creative work, because I found for me that I can't do creative work when I really feel the immediate effects of Adderall. Again, that's just for me. And so what I do is I take Adderall in the morning and do all the things that I usually don't have focus or motivation to do. Like, I do my workout, I do my admin, I do my email, I do anything that will carry me throughout the day that I need to do. So like grocery shopping, where like a lot of times I won't be able to find that time or wherewithal or prioritization. If I spend the morning doing other things, like if I instantly try to write, or if I like doom scroll, or I like consume the entire internet, then the things that sort of help my well-being and my mood and like my depressiveness really don't get done, and those things get worse. So that's how I divide it up. I've shared before on this Podlet about how I was really not understanding the way Adderall was affecting my writing, and that still remains to be kind of true. And so, you know, and also historically, I remember with like recreational drug use or like cannabis or even like, you know, pretty much anything that like when I sleep, it sort of resets. Like I am instantly sober if I sleep, no matter how long I sleep for duration wise. And so I have a practice of sleeping right after lunch for anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes. And so once I really started understanding the contours of ADHD, there was a part of me that was still like, you know, it's that same intuitive thing of, yeah, but like, I still don't get it. And then, you know, I'm like sensitive. I'm like embarrassed about the words that I'm about to say, even though it was so instructive for me. Like, I did this like psilocybin journey, and I did this like wild mushroom journey to process grief and to help myself move through it. And also, like, I had questions about motherhood and whether or not this was it, and whether or not I would regret it. And like, I had all these big questions, and one of them was really interesting, which was that like, am I evil? And the sort of companion piece to that was like, am I crazy? And for lack of a better terminology to put this, and again, if you're rattled by horrible douche chills listening to someone talk about their like psilocybin journey, fair, but the answer to that question was, that's kind of the wrong question. It was like, do you think the way you do? Yes. Is that necessarily crazy or evil? it was just really like sort of suggesting that that framing was some like external thing. But it really just wanted me to know that I think the way I think. And as a result of that, I just sort of carried around this thing of like, what does it mean to think the way I think? Devoid of like morality or like even like pathology, right? Where it's like, well, what's wrong with you that you think the way you think? Like, I just sort of carried around this question of like, I think the way I think, you know, and like turning it over and seeing what that means. And honestly, it was such a throwaway comment by someone in my life. And, you know, whatever, this might be not whatever, but like, this might sound ableist, this might sound totally insensitive, but they were like, sometimes I really feel as though that you are like autistic or something. Like, I just, the way you processed what we just talked about is just astounding to me. Yes, that is probably very ableist. And yes, actually, I've learned since, and you know that I love new words, that a person without autism, well, you know, you have autistic and then non-autistic, which is allistic, like A-L-L-I-S-T-I-C. And yes, that was very like allistic and insensitive thing to say, but it kind of just stuck somewhere. And so then I carried that around, like what if I'm autistic? What if there's no morality to that? Like, I knew that there was no quote unquote like cure or treatment or anything. Like, what if that is just a part of the framework of my operating system? And so I turned it over for a while, and, you know, I looked around about getting assessed and like have like being covered for assessment and like getting assessment as an adult and like what the thinking around that was. And a lot of people self-diagnose because that's what's most helpful to them. And like, what does it matter if like they're quote unquote officially autistic, if thinking about themselves through that lens allows them to be more gentle, allows them to create accommodations and adjustments, and advocate for themselves in the world. And I, though, probably, you know, I really just wanted a diagnosis. Like, I really struggle with, you know, it's probably like my PTSD in my childhood. Like, I really struggle with like vagueness and like not feeling official or feeling like I'm faking or feeling like I just want like a brand name or like all this stuff. And I was just like, or what if I just want this thing and I can afford it and I can give it to myself. And so I was assessed by the SAC Center in New York. I believe it's based in New York. They're based in a lot of different places, and it's over Zoom, and they assess you for 2.5 hours if you want to be assessed for autism and ADHD. And I was interviewed first for about an hour, which is really helpful for either adults who have been masking for a long time, women who tend to be underdiagnosed because, you know, we can read social cues and context and usually have like layered consciousness of self-consciousness because we're already sort of trying to like not put ourselves in danger and are being really observant. And then also, hello, I'm Asian, coming from like a collectivist mindset where reading the room is considered like polite and also very much like the way to do everything and be community minded. And so the interview part was really great because it tends to be more sensitive and in assessing any sort of subclinical aspects to your autism. And then there were like multiple questionnaires, and that was also really helpful. And then that's how I got assessed for autism and found out that I am, you know, again, not to get into amounts, but like essentially like a little autistic and very attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, very ADHD. And so since then, it's been really helpful. Like, you know, my partner recently said, you know, like, what if what if you didn't have this diagnosis and you just sort of like allowed yourself to have the needs that you have that you know about? And I was just like, sure, but for me, it's really helpful to essentially have like a doctor's note explaining why to myself, for myself, why I don't like loud bars where there's a lot of simultaneous conversations and also music, like why I don't like road trips, why I don't like concerts, like why I like certain people and not other people, why I'm so sensitive to smells and can't be in certain spaces, and like why I really struggle with like friendship and intimacy, and why I sometimes go days ignoring my partner, but not on purpose, but just because I'm overstimulated in other ways. And, you know, knowing that I'm autistic helps me have little, just really kind things to help me out. Like I don't know if I shared about this before, but my partner really struggles with my ignoring him, which is kind of like that autistic thing of like not making eye contact, because it just feels like too much information, which I definitely have. And so I have a post-it behind my laptop that says, go say hello. And what that means is when I'm ready, I can go talk to my partner and let him know that I'm not ignoring him. And that's really beneficial to him and his own issues around like abandonment. But another thing is like I kept, and I don't know if this is in concert with ADHD as well, but like I really struggle with knowing who my friends are, like, and knowing how to apportion time and prioritize those relationships. And so I actually have a list of people who are my friends. And I know that if you're not on that list, then you're an acquaintance. And I don't say this to say that like, you know, I'm only friends with these people and not these people. It's just that so that I can know, because I don't really have an intuitive sense in the moment when someone asks me to make a plan on the spot, whether or not this person is a safe person that I feel comfortable with 100% of the time, or this person is a colleague slash work person who, you know, who they might understand that they're asking something of me, but me going into the meeting may not necessarily understand that. And oh my goodness, like knowing that I'm autistic and this is why, not that like, the fact that I don't have to like search for a reason why I think this way or go to this meeting, be asked of something in this professional capacity, leave and feel so resentful towards this colleague who is not my friend, feeling as though I've been betrayed by this person. And so that energy is no longer expended in quite the same way. And so as a result, like, that's why I'm really, really happy to have this knowledge. And so, yeah, like, part of this exercise from the beginning has been like carrying information and maybe not immediately reacting to it. And I cannot imagine anything more gentle. The other part is that, like, you know, there's something really powerful in the knowledge that, you know, apparently I was talking to the clinician and people who go to be assessed in adulthood usually most of the time are autistic because they've by then like collected enough data despite being like virtually undetectable because of like a lifelong series of masking. They usually are autistic by that point. And so I've been really thinking about the fact that, you know, my mom wasn't just like violent and loud and like scary. She was also like violent and loud and scary to an autistic child. And so I'm like, oh, it's not that she's vile and evil. It's just that we are like pretty ill-suited and we didn't have that information. And that really allows me to like think of myself as like an autistic kid. And when I'm doing things like, no, you have to do these back-to-back meetings because otherwise, you know, like you're not appreciative or you're not like a good colleague, or, you know, all of the things that you stand to gain are going to be lost because you're ungrateful. Like, sometimes those just get really distilled to basically like, would you force this like kid who's overstimulated? Also, I'm laughing because there's sirens going by. And yeah, would you force that person? I'm like trying to debate whether I'll wait. Anyway, would you force that person into the schedule that you usually like cram yourself into? And that really does help me arrive at a certain tenor of gentleness that has never been available before. So this is long, and I wish you a gentle day, and I wish you just total peace and like quietude and opportunities to hear yourself. Because it feels miraculous that I was able to, as someone who disassociates and numbs and never knows their feelings. So yeah, I share this as a missive of hope, and I hope you have a gentle day.